Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Today, we are undertaking a deep dive into, well, what's arguably one of the most intellectually ambitious novels of the 20th century, Doris Lessing's 1962 masterpiece, The Golden Notebook. Lessing, who eventually won the Nobel Prize in Literature in 2007, crafted this book that really challenged the conventional novel form. And it became, you know, an essential blueprint for modern feminist thought, even though, and this is interesting, she fiercely resisted that limiting label.
Right. She pushed back on that quite a bit. And her own background is so critical here. You have to remember, she spent her formative years navigating the stark realities of colonial Southern Rhodesia. Then she moved to the political fervor of post-war London, as a single mother, and she was deeply involved in the Communist Party before, well, becoming profoundly disillusioned with it.
Mm-hmm. That unique perspective, political, colonial, and gendered, it gave her this perfect lens, didn't it, to examine modern anxiety?
Absolutely. She saw the issues weren't just surface-level, social, or political.
They were structural.
Exactly. Structural. She insisted the book's central focus was this unavoidable fragmentation of the modern individual.
How do you hold yourself together, you know, when politics, love, art, daily life, they all seem to be pulling you in completely different directions?
It really is the definitive novel of fractured identity, I think.
Yeah.
It asks, what happens when the world you rely on for structure, maybe it's a political ideology, maybe a relationship, what happens when that collapses?
Okay, so let's unpack this a bit. Our mission today is to navigate this revolutionary, fragmented structure of the Golden Notebook. We want to understand the intense psychological journey of its protagonist, the writer Anna Wolf, and track her desperate search for psychological integration in a world that seems almost designed for breakdown.
And the core premise sets up this struggle immediately. Anna Wolf, living in London, she's facing this creative crisis, intense personal chaos.
Mm.
Her chosen method for survival is a strategy of, well, rigorous compartmentalization. She tries to impose order by dividing her entire existence, her memories, politics, feelings, art, into four distinct color-coded notebooks.
Right. And let's start by acknowledging that structure. It's a hurdle, deliberately so. Lessing avoids a simple linear narrative. The novel just relentlessly alternates between this conventional third-person framing story called Free Women and the intensely subjective first-person accounts within those four notebooks. And this isn't just, you know, tricky prose. It forces you, the listener, into the same process Anna is undergoing.
Yes. The structure is the physical manifestation of her compartmentalized consciousness.
It makes you feel the fragmentation.
Exactly. And the notebooks, they're Anna's attempt to achieve some kind of intellectual distance from her pain. They're tools for self-diagnosis, you could say. But ultimately, they become prisons. They actually prevent her from seeing the whole connected self.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's detail those four self-contained worlds. Let's analyze the specific material Anna is trying so hard to keep separate.
Right. So we begin with the black notebook. This one is devoted to Anna's artistic life. She records her debilitating writer's block here, and also those deeply formative experiences from her time in colonial Africa, Southern Rhodesia.
Mm-hmm.
And what's fascinating here is the tension between authentic, raw experience, the violence, the complexity of colonialism, and the artifice required to turn that truth into, well, publishable fiction.
So the act of writing it down changes it somehow.
Precisely. Anna finds that writing the truth often feels like a betrayal, or at least a simplification. The moment she tries to impose narrative order, the real truth seems to just slip away.
Okay, so that's the black notebook, art in the past. What's next?
Next, we have the red notebook. This captures the death of her political self. It's a chronological record tracing her enthusiastic involvement with the Communist Party.
Right.
And then her agonizing descent into disillusionment. This trajectory reflects that profound intellectual crisis of the mid-century left, you know, especially following the truth about Stalin's regime and the Soviet suppression of the Hungarian uprising.
A crisis of faith in the grand narrative.
Absolutely. It's here that Anna first grapples with the idea that these grand overarching ideologies fail because they just cannot account for human complexity.
That disillusionment, it really marks the beginning of what some critics call Anna's epistemological crisis. That moment she loses faith in finding any reliable political or social truth.
And that loss of faith just compounds the emotional failure recorded in the Yellow Notebook.
The fictionalized one.
Yes. This is her emotional life, but crucially, she can't face it directly. She fictionalizes her long, painful affair with a married man named Michael. She creates these literary stand-ins, Ella and Paul.
So, by transforming her devastating heartbreak into controlled fiction, she's attempting to gain intellectual control. Distance.
Exactly. Emotional evasion disguised as artistic creation, you could say.
It sounds like a pattern, avoiding the direct hit.
It is. And that brings us to the rawest, most dangerous entry point. The Blue Notebook.
The diary.
The closest we get to a daily diary, yes. It records her dreams, the mundane events of her life, her sessions with her psychoanalyst, who she simply refers to as Mother Sugar.
Right. And what's fascinating here is that even psychoanalysis, which is supposed to lead to integration, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just becomes another rigid system Anna tries to use for structure. It doesn't quite work as intended.
No. The Blue Notebook tracks her accelerating, inevitable path towards psychological breakdown.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. Lessing shows us that the very defense mechanism Anna relies on fragmentation, it ultimately becomes this self-imposed prison.
It backfires.
Completely. She cannot achieve wholeness because she refuses to let these parts of her life interact, bleed into each other. The entire novel poses the central question. Can a modern individual saturated with conflicting ideologies ever achieve psychological integration in a world that seems to promote fracture?
And that tension, it just explodes most vividly in her relationships. Crucial to the Free Women Frame story is her deep, sustaining friendship with Molly Jacobs, an actress.
Her best friend.
Yes. Molly is Anna's pragmatic, grounded counterpart. She represents resilience and that crucial female solidarity against the societal limitations they both face as single women in 1950s, 60s London.
But their lives, I mean, despite being intellectually free, they're riddled with financial worry, emotional compromise. It's not simple.
Not at all. And this fragility is perhaps symbolized by Molly's alienated son, Tommy Jacobs.
Ah, Tommy. His storyline is quite jarring.
It is. Tommy rejects his parents' failed ideals, the perceived hollowness of their liberated intellectual lives, and his subsequent suicide attempt. Well, it's a devastating catalyst. It shatters the compromises Anna and Molly have made.
It forces them to reckon with the real-world consequences of their intellectual freedom, doesn't it? It's not just an idea anymore.
Exactly. And this reckoning leads Anna directly to Saul Green, the final and arguably most destructive male figure in the novel.
Saul Green, the American writer.
Yes. He's described almost as a psychological doppelganger for Anna, her equal in intelligence and just as neurotically unstable.
So their affair, it's not your typical romance plot.
Oh, definitely not. It's intense, mutually destructive. It's like a psychological battle waged within the claustrophobic confines of Anna's London flat.
It sounds less like a relationship and more like a necessary confrontation. He mirrors her chaos back at her.
That's a great way to put it. He prevents her from retreating back into her tidy, color-coded compartments. He forces the issue.
And as they descend into this shared madness, the narrative itself starts to break down too, right?
Absolutely. The entries in the Blue Notebook become scattered, illogical, obsessive. The neat barriers between past, present, dream, they dissolve entirely. It signifies a complete mental crisis.
So the climax, then, is that descent into chaos with Saul, this period of shared madness, raw neurosis.
Yes. And paradoxically, it's intensely creative. It forces Anna to confront her deepest fears about truth, art, love. It demands the total abandonment of her previous defensive identity.
The breakdown is the breakthrough.
In a sense, yes. And out of that fire comes the crucial insight, the recognition that synthesis is the only way forward, integration.
And that's the moment she begins writing in the Golden Notebook.
Exactly. That color, gold, it symbolizes the integration of all the separated parts, the political chaos from red, the emotional devastation from yellow, the artistic blockage from black. It becomes the record of chaos accepted rather than compartmentalized away.
So it represents the acceptance of contradiction, of messiness, as a prerequisite for wholeness. The Golden Notebook doesn't offer a neat, unified perspective. It's a record of the struggle itself.
Precisely. And the resolution of this struggle is profoundly, well, metafictional. The novel starts talking about the act of writing a novel.
Right. That ending is quite something.
It is. In a moment of strange clarity, maybe tenderness, Saul gives Anna the opening line of her next novel. He says he can no longer write, but she must. And that line is, "The two women were alone in the London flat."
Which, of course, is the opening line of the framing novella, Free Women, the very book we, the readers, have been reading all along.
Chills. Right. Sure. It signifies the creative breakthrough. It links the chaotic internal self, the notebooks, back into the external, more ordered reality of the frame story.
Mm.
It demonstrates that the art, the ability to create again, is born directly from surviving that mental crisis.
So Anna's arc concludes. How? Where does she end up?
Well, she turns away from the abstract ideologies, both political and psychological, that ultimately failed her. Post-breakdown, she shifts to practical, applied empathy. She chooses to work as a marriage guidance counselor.
Wow. From intellectual analysis to the practical, messy work of human connection.
A huge shift.
So what does this novel written in 1962 offer us today, six decades later? These core themes feel remarkably prescient.
They really do. Lessing just lays bare the paradox of the free woman. Anne and Molly, they've secured liberation from traditional marriage, yes. Yet they are crushed by loneliness, financial precarity, the absence of a defined role sometimes.
She shows that economic and social freedom is just the first step. It doesn't automatically guarantee psychological wholeness.
Not at all. And the Red Notebooks critique the failure of grand ideologies that remain so vital. Anna's disillusionment serves as this perpetual warning. We must constantly question overarching systems, whether they're political, economic, even therapeutic systems.
Systems that promise simplicity but deny human complexity.
Exactly.
And this brings us to the novel's radical redefinition of mental health, which feels very contemporary, too. The breakdown isn't presented as a pathological failure that needs fixing, is it?
No, quite deliberately. It's framed more as a necessary breakthrough, a destructive yes, but ultimately cleansing fire. It burns away those fragmented defensive identities, allowing a more integrated and resilient self to emerge, hopefully.
And the novel's concern over language? That feeling of words losing meaning, that really hits home now.
Oh, absolutely. Anna notes it in the Blue Notebook. I am increasingly afflicted by vertigo, where words mean nothing. Words have no single fixed meaning.
When I use a word, it is immediately contradicted by its opposite.
Yes. That linguistic anxiety, that feeling that truth collapses under the weight of endless conflicting definitions, it perfectly captures the information overload, the polarization of our digital age, doesn't it?
It really does. It feels like Lessing saw it coming. I think the novel's enduring legacy is its structural daring. It didn't just tell the story of fragmentation.
No, it made the form become the theme.
Right. Forcing the reader to do the painful work of integration right alongside Anna, you experience it.
And if there is one message that resonates today, perhaps it's that true authenticity requires not eliminating life's painful contradictions and messiness.
But embracing them.
Yes, embracing them. The courageous, ongoing work of integrating them into a complicated, yet maybe powerfully resilient self.
A constant negotiation, not a final solution.
That's beautifully put.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.